be liberated from the cycle of life and death. So these are the Sravaka practitioner. Their aim is they basically want to understand the truth of suffering, the truth of the causes of suffering, and how to end suffering and to attend Nirvana. And Pragya Buddha have same aim as the Sravaka, but they are a bit sharper in their spiritual foundation. They are able to contemplate themselves by looking at the change of weather, the flower withered, changes that happen in our world. They start to realize that life is impermanent. And they want, and this is not something that they want to rely on, and they want to be free from the entanglement of the of life and death and attend Nirvana. So their aim is to be liberated from cycle of life and death and attending Nirvana. So both Sravaka and Pragya Buddha have the mind to renounce. And then another type of person, they like the Buddha, they admire the Buddha who is so perfect in the wisdom and compassion, giving sentient beings brightness and warmth, giving everyone comfort. At the same time, he himself is so at peace and at ease, so great. So they hope that they can attend supreme enlightenment like the Buddha to help and guide sentient beings. So these are people whom we call that they try to practice the Bodhisattva vehicle. So these are the five types of vehicles. So you have the human, the heaven, Sravaka, Pragya Buddha, and Bodhisattva. So all these are Buddhist practitioner, but the aim is different. So we have teachings common to the five vehicles, which talks about cause and effect, wholesomeness and unwholesomeness, to be a better person. So whether you are practicing Bodhisattva path or Sravaka path, you still have to uphold the precepts. You still have to practice meditation. You still need to be able to justify what is wholesome, unwholesome, and believe or understand the teachings of cause and effect, and be able to cultivate good causes so that you don't lead yourself to deterioration. And then you have teachings common to the three vehicles, the Sravaka, Pragya Buddha, and Bodhisattva, who wants to renounce. So Bodhisattva look upon the Buddha's supreme enlightenment, but they do have the wish to end finally end afflictions and cycle of life and death. But they are not that, they don't have this strong urge. Their urge is not as strong as Sravaka, because they, because of their compassion, they want to help and guide sentient beings. But then at the same time, they understand this world is impermanent. This world is nothing nice to attach to. But then they are able to endure the difficulties in the world so that they can help and guide sentient beings. So teaching common to the three vehicles are that they need to understand the world is imperfect, life is imperfect, and they need, so they understand the truth of suffering, the truth of the causes of suffering, and that suffering can be ended, and they try to walk on the path leading to end of suffering, and they understand the teachings of impermanence, causes and conditions. And then finally, you have this Bodhisattva. Besides understanding that life is impermanent, life is suffering, they want to renounce, but then at the same time, they want to develop great compassion in helping and guiding sentient beings. So the compassion, the Bodhisattva path emphasize on compassion and wisdom. So besides being a good person, besides understand impermanence and life is suffering, they cultivate a lot on their compassion, so that they can, the compassion become a motivation for them to endure difficulties, although they understand that things in the world is not good attached to, but then out of compassion, they try to guide sentient beings while in the world that is impermanence. So that is the great vehicle. And so five vehicles, so teachings common to the five vehicles, which talks about how to be a better person. Teachings common to the three vehicles teach about how to renounce and attain liberation. And then distinctive teachings of the great vehicle teach a person how to perfect themselves in their wisdom and compassion like the Buddha. Not only that they can be enlightened themselves, but also have this great motivation in helping and guiding others. Because a lot of people tend to say that Buddhism talks about life is suffering, we need to end suffering, we need to have non-attachment. Then when we have no attachment, how can we have motivation to help others? Some people tend to ask this question. So the motivation comes from wisdom and compassion. Okay, so we talk a bit more afterwards. So from this triangle, you can see that the Sravaka and Praka Buddha, they need to practice the teachings common to the five vehicles as well, but then they learn more on impermanence, suffering, causes and conditions that help them to understand life is impermanent and that there's nothing to cling on and they renounce. Then the Bodhisattva need to practice all this, understand and practice all this as well. But then on top of that, they need to perfect in their wisdom and compassion and Bodhi mind. Okay, so this triangle, you can see that the Bodhisattva cannot say, I'm a Bodhisattva, I only learn the distinctive teachings of the Great Vehicle and not learning others. No, it's like a pyramid. If you only learn the top without foundation, you're going to fall. Right? So they are mutual dependence on one another and mutual inclusive. Okay? So that's the different types of practices. And so the Mahayana, so come to the terminology Mahayana. Mahayana means the great vehicle. So Maha actually means great. Yana is the vehicle. So it's a Sanskrit word. So it's Maha is great and Yana is vehicle. So it's the great vehicle. Why it is called the great vehicle? Because it is vast and inclusive. So if you look at this, it includes so all kind of people and also its teachings includes all. So the teachings is vast and inclusive. And the mind is not just trying to attain liberation themselves, but want to help and guide sentient beings. So the mind is broad and embracing, and the goal is high and supreme. And that's why it is called the Great Vehicle or the Mahayana. Okay, so that's the first terminology that we have explained. Okay, next, Bodhisattva. So before we talk about Bodhisattva, what is Bodhi? We talk about Bodhi now. Right? Bodhi means enlightenment. And this day, Bodhi seems to be a word that's quite common. Some restaurant even use the word Bodhi. but then a lot of people may not understand what does Bodhi means. Bodhi means enlightenment or awakening. And the enlightenment can be of different levels as well. So we have Sambodhi, Sambodhi, Anuttara, Sambodhi. So there are three different levels. So when a person attend a noble state, we can say that they attend Sambodhi. And when they get to the stage of Arahat or in the Mahayana practice, that when they get to when they realize the non-rising and falling, and they enter the stage of stage eight of the Bodhisattva practice, we say they attain the wisdom of Sambodhi. And finally, the Buddha's supreme perfect enlightenment is called Anuttara Sambodhi. So there are a few different levels. So Buddhahood is the supreme perfect enlightenment. In the Sanskrit term is Anuttara Sambodhi, which means great enlightenment, and it encompasses all virtues. So the Bodhi means enlightenment in short. So when we say we develop the Bodhi mind, it means the resolution to attain enlightenment. So when we talk about develop the Bodhi mind, it especially means the great determination to attain the perfect enlightenment of the Buddha, which is the great determination to attain Buddhahood. Okay. All right. So now comes to Bodhisattva. So we explain Bodhi. Now we talk about Bodhisattva. So just now we say Bodhi means enlightenment. All right, especially when we say when someone develop the body mind, is the mind to attain perfect enlightenment like the Buddha. So bodhisattva means the enlightened sentient beings or sentient beings who want to enlighten others. So it has two connotations. One is that it refers to the enlightened sentient beings or the sentient beings who seek enlightenment and want to guide sentient beings to be enlightened. So in other words, they seek perfect enlightenment. They themselves want to seek perfect enlightenment like the Buddha. At the same time, they want to help and guide all sentient beings to attain enlightenment. That's the bodhisattva. So in other words, they have two main vow. That is, they themselves always look upon the Buddha as their role model. They want to attain perfect enlightenment like the Buddha. At the same time, they have this vow that want to help and guide other sentient beings to be free from suffering and attain enlightenment. Okay. So bodhisattva, sometimes we tend to think of bodhisattva as the great bodhisattva, like the Guanyin bodhisattva, the Siddhigaba bodhisattva, the Manjushri bodhisattva. But in fact, bodhisattva can be used to refer to anyone who is practicing the great vehicle, from beginners to experienced practitioner up to the great bodhisattva. So of course, the beginners could be just ordinary person like us. So if you develop the great body mind that you want to you want to look upon the Buddha as a role model and set your determination to follow the path and of practicing like the Buddha, then you can also call a person as such an ordinary kindergarten bodhisattva. Right? But you have initiated your mind. So when we say when you initiated the body mind, it's not just simply say, okay, I think I want to develop, I want to learn from the Buddha. This is a determination. So it's not just simply say for the joy of it or for the sake of it, but it should be coming from your own heart, your determination. So after one has initiated the body mind, practice the bodhisattva path, practices, benefit oneself and others, then they attend. So it is true, they develop a body mind and then they practice the bodhisattva practices, benefited themselves and others, that they attain perfection in their merits and wisdom, that one become a Buddha. Okay, so that's bodhisattva means that someone who have who initiated the body mind, they want to attain enlightenment like the Buddha, at the same time help and guide all sentient beings. So as a bodhisattva, it is very important for them to set their resolution firm. So the initial resolution to attain bodhi emphasize the firm establishment of their great vow. So as I said just then, it's not just say, oh, I think I will develop bodhi mind today, only today. That is not body mind, okay? So it's a firm establishment of the great vow to seek the path of the Buddha and help and guide sentient beings. So the bodhisattva vow, this is a general vow that all bodhisattvas should practice. So that is their vow to guide boundless sentient beings. I vow to eliminate endless affliction. So as we say just then, a bodhisattva not only just develop their wisdom and compassion, they need to eliminate their afflictions as well. They do have a mind to renounce as well, but at the same time, they have this boundless compassion that they want to help and guide sentient beings. And because they want to help and guide sentient beings, it is important for them to learn innumerable doctrines or teach methods of practice. So sometimes we just say, for example, when we study, sometimes we say, oh, I do not like maths. I want to only study arts, or I only like to study maths. I don't want to study science. But as a bodhisattva, they do not just study what suits them or what is their strength, but they try to learn as many methods as they can so that when they help others, they have the skill. So sometimes they learn it not just because, not because they think that it's useful to themselves, but they think maybe at certain time I may need this skill to help others. For example, during Bodhi Night Off, you learn a lot of skill in making videos, taking photos, and also editing. Or there's a lot of things that you learn. You may thought, why am I doing this after Bodhi Night's uses? Who knows? In your life, at certain time, you may use them. And maybe you can use that to help others to be happy. Or who knows, one day you are looking for a job and this is a skill that is needed. And it's not studied in your course, but actually you learn it in Bodhi Night. Right? So the Bodhisattva, they don't limit their learning. They try to learn as long as they are good skill, they try to learn it so that they can be applicable at the time when it's needed. And they vow to accomplish the unsurpassed Buddha way. So they vow to accomplish the Buddhahood. So that is the general vow of all Bodhisattva. So resolving to attend Bodhi Mind or to attend perfect enlightenment, the resolution to develop Bodhi Mind to attend perfection like the Buddha is not just occasionally thinking about becoming a Buddha. But rather it requires firm effort and determination and patience. So, and cultivating the Bodhi Mind is a first step in practicing the Mahayana or to learn to be a Bodhisattva. Okay. All right. So that is the vow. And with the Bodhi Mind, the basic for practice of the Bodhisattva path, besides the Bodhi Mind, the Bodhisattva need to cultivate kindness and compassion and wisdom. So these three are the essential, three essentials for the practice of the Bodhisattva path. So a Bodhisattva's practice must correspond with Bodhi Mind. So whatever good deeds that they are doing, whether it's practicing patience, whether it's practicing giving, it has to be initiated, it should be corresponding with the Bodhi Mind and comes with good kindness and compassion, and also coupled with wisdom, especially the wisdom of emptiness, that is non-attachment. Because if a Bodhisattva think that they want to learn to be like the Buddha, but they have no kindness, compassion and wisdom, they just think, I want to be like the Buddha, so they help others, so it looks like they want to learn to be like the Buddha, but they have no compassion to the person, and then at the same time they develop India arrogant and think that, look, I'm so great, I'm doing a great deed like the Buddha, or that is going to go astray because the ego is growing, there's no wisdom there, right? So that's why Bodhi Mind, loving kindness and compassion and wisdom is very important. It is a basic basis for the, or the foundation for the practice of the Bodhisattva path. So with these three important minds, the Bodhisattva cultivate all practices skillfully, and then this will lead the Bodhisattva along the Buddha path. So for example, as we say, these three minds are very important in the Bodhisattva practice. A Bodhisattva try to practice giving. It must correspond with Bodhi Mind, that is thinking of how to help the person so that the person can be free from suffering, and at the same time guiding the person so that maybe create some opportunity for the person to learn the teachings and be able to attain enlightenment one day. So it has to be with the Bodhi Mind of helping and guiding sentient beings. Secondly, you must have kindness and compassion, right? So you share the feelings of the other person, try to understand what this person needs, and try to help in the way that make the person comfortable. And then thirdly, you need to have the wisdom to see the emptiness of things. So emptiness means, so I'm not sure if there are new members here, emptiness in Buddhism sometimes tends to lead to a lot of misunderstanding, but emptiness means that everything arises due to causes and conditions. They are all in the process of changing. They are not as fixed as what we thought. So we say, for example, we are able to practice generosity. So sometimes we feel so great. Look, I'm so great. I give something to this person. I help this person to get over the suffering. And we feel so great. And we keep talking about it and keep telling our friends. So I'm so happy. I'm so great. And look, I'm such a kind person. So then we are attached to that. We are very kind, and subconsciously we did not realize that our arrogance probably has developed. And we maybe subconsciously we may also be thinking, like, would this person one day come and thanks me? What's this person going to give me? We start to attach to reward as well. And if this person just say thank you and go and never comes back, then it's like, I'm not going to help this person anymore. This person is heartless. And you start to feel unhappy. That's because we fall into the trap of attachment. But if you think carefully, I'm able to give. Where does this ability the ability that I have come from? Today, I have some money. I can buy something and give something to this person. But where does my money come from? Because I work. Why do you have the ability to work? Because I'm smart. But where does your smart come from? Are you born smart? You're a baby. Yes, maybe you have the IQ, but if you're born in an era where there's no one taking care of you and somehow is in poverty or in a place where you can't even survive and no one take care of you and you didn't go to school and you don't have education, your skill will be totally different. So now that we have the skill, we have to be very thankful to our parents, to whoever have supported us along the way, the childcare teacher, the kindergarten teacher, the primary school teachers, the high school teachers, as well as friends that support us along the way, and people who printed the books, people who built the school, people who have made the facilities so convenient for us. We owe gratitude to all these people. So our skill come from the accumulation of a lot of causes and conditions. It is not just our sole property. So why are we so arrogant about? We are just probably a person who probably just happened to be here at this time, and that person needs certain help, and we happen to have this skill, but the skill that we have come from the support of a lot of people. And it just also happened that the recipient needs what the skill that we have. If the recipient do not need the skill we have, what they want is another type of help, we probably can't do much. So you can see that our skill come from a lot of causes and conditions, and we ourselves are changing. We are not a fixed thing. And the recipient, the same thing, is another person with the same, it's the same as us. It's always subject to change. Even that incident, that action of giving arises due to causes and conditions. Because I'm just happen to be here, that person happened to be there, and I just happen to have this thing. It arises due to causes and conditions, and it happened. It's a nice thing that it happened, and it has passed. So then if we have the wisdom to see that this is what we mean by empty in nature, that it is combination of causes and conditions, always in the process of changing. It is not a fixed entity. And so if we are able to see the truth of this, learn to appreciate and learn to let go, this is called the wisdom, and this is also called that we possess a skillful means of seeing the truth. And it is by doing so that your practice of giving can be more perfect, and that you also would not develop unhappiness because of your practice of giving. Sometimes people practice generosity, but ends up they feel very frustrated. It's because they start to compare with others who may give more than them, or others who give gain some praise, and they start to feel jealous. That's because we fall into attachment. So a bodhisattva must give a correspond to body-mind for the sake of seeking enlightenment and helping and guiding sentient beings. So I think yesterday in CDT, someone was saying that when we organize potluck, is it a skillful means, right? So same thing, we need whatever we are organizing in Unibus, we try to couple, try to relate to these three essentials. Try to think of how we want to help and guide everyone to learn the teaching. Although we use methods that are more attractive because everyone are of different acceptance levels, so we want to use methods that are attractive to guide them. But then ultimately, we know that it is the teachings that can benefit them the most. So we can use interesting methods to guide them in, but then we want to share them good teachings. And in that way, we help them in a more ultimate way. Okay, so that's the three mind, very important, the basic or the foundation of the bodhisattva practice. So if one lacks the wisdom of seeing the emptiness of things start to fall into attachment to the act of giving, as we say, one is unskillful and will not be able to end the cycle of life and death. So we can say that bodhi-mind is like the aspiration that want to help and guide sentient beings. Compassionate mind is the motive. And wisdom of being able to see the emptiness of things is a skill, a skillfulness in performing the deeds. So if one relies on these three important mind as a foundation, then in cultivating that practice, then all practices were geared towards the Mahayana practice and lead to the perfect enlightenment. So if we are practicing, say, the six parameter that we're going to talk of afterwards, generosity, patience, but then we do not have these three mind. You don't have body mind, you don't have kindness and compassion, you don't have wisdom, then it may end up to be just cultivating good merits, but not necessarily helping you to reduce afflictions and suffering or attain Buddhahood. So these three minds are very important. It's the core or foundation of the Bodhisattva practice. So in the Mahaprajna Paramita Sutra, it says that all thoughts that correspond with the wisdom that come from all wisdom, that's that wisdom that come from all wisdom means the perfect wisdom of the Buddha. So in other words, we look upon the perfect wisdom of the Buddha as our role model and guided by great compassion, and also have non-attainability, that is the wisdom of non-attachment as a skillful mean, then we will be able to help to practice the Bodhisattva practice well. So in other words, what is mentioned in Mahaprajna Paramita is also these three things, which is body, mind, kindness and compassion, and wisdom of emptiness. Okay, so these are the virtues that is important in the Mahayana practices. All right, so the practice of the Bodhisattva path. So just now we talk about the basis, the foundation, which is this three mind. And so the Mahayana practice, the great vehicle is the Mahayana practice, is basically the course of practice of the body mind. So in other words, we try to perfect the body mind. We initiated the body mind, as just now we say, that there are different stages of the body mind. Finally, it's Anuttara Sambodhi. So the resolution to attain Bodhi or enlightenment has the Mahayana faithful vow as the essence. So the vow of helping and guiding all sentient beings, the vow to end our afflictions, the vow of learning boundless methods of practice, the vow of attain perfect enlightenment like the Buddha. So one cannot become a Buddha just having faithful vow. You can't just set vow and no action. So after we make vow, we must go further to practice the practices. So there are precepts. So we talk about five precepts. There are also Bodhisattva precepts, which give the Bodhisattva some guidelines on how to practice at the same time develop their loving kindness and compassion and wisdom. So the bodhisattva precepts, sometimes we call it areas of learning that helps you to become a bodhisattva, includes the six paramita, the four embracing virtues. So all these are practices, but the important thing that we need to avoid, because these are obstacles to the bodhisattva practice, is that if someone lost their body mind, if at halfway learning they say, I don't want to practice like the Buddha anymore, I prefer to just be a better person. When you lost your body mind, you're not going to pursue this path. So loss of body mind is actually one of the greatest obstacles for bodhisattva, because bodhisattva path is quite challenging. There are a lot of obstacles, there are a lot of challenges and difficulties, because you have to deal with a lot of people. You want to help others. Sometimes people don't accept your help. You will try to guide them with good teachings. Sometimes people's mentality is just so difficult to change. Looking at, we say, wearing masks. There are people whom, just because they don't want to wear masks, they could go for demonstration. So mental thinking is very difficult. Very difficult to change sometimes. So, but bodhisattva only have to have patience. So jealousy, if the bodhisattva get jealous very easily, that's difficult to practice bodhisattva path as well. Because bodhisattva is supposed to rejoice with other people's improvement. You want to help and guide others, and you're being improved, you start to feel jealous. So I'm not going to help you anymore. Then you probably can't practice bodhisattva path. Stinginess, we're talking about bodhisattva, always try to give help. Generosity, if you're too stingy, that doesn't help as well. Anger and arrogant, if bodhisattva is short-tempered, very arrogant, bossy, it basically deter people from liking to be with you, then it's very difficult. So all this obstruct the act of benevolence and violate the precepts of the Mahayana or the Great Vehicle. All right, so those are the things that if someone wants to practice bodhisattva path, these are some of the mindset that we need to avoid, because this really make your practice of bodhisattva path a bit difficult. And the core teachings of the bodhisattva practices, six paramita and the four embracing virtues. So today we're going to talk about the six paramitas. Okay, so what are the six paramitas? So the six paramitas are six practices that can help us to cross the sea of suffering and arrive at the shore of bliss. So by upholding the three essential principles, body, mind, loving kindness, and compassion and wisdom, a bodhisattva practices six paramitas. So when a bodhisattva practices six paramitas, it has to be guided by this three mind. Because if it's not guided by this three mind, a person may practice generosity, thinking that they want to accumulate merits for themselves so that they have a better future life. Then that is not a bodhisattva path. So for a bodhisattva who practices the six paramita, it must be guided by body mind, loving kindness and compassion, and wisdom. Okay, so these are the six items. So let's go on. So as we say, the mindset is very important. So there are people who cultivate practice generosity to cultivate merits for themselves or to reduce their own greed and attachment. That's still not the bodhisattva's mind. A bodhisattva will give with the mind of benefiting others and letting go, not attachment. So it can be giving of material things, giving of teaching, giving comfort or an encouragement. And it's giving with a mind of compassion and wisdom, as we have the example that we've talked before. So a bodhisattva like to accumulate as much merit as he or she can, but they don't cling on to this merit. So they just like to practice generosity tirelessly, but they don't try to calculate the merits. say how much merit have I calculated, how many tons of merit have I got, is it enough to attend Buddhahood? You can't calculate the merits. So you need a boundless mind to just help. And the Bodhisattva will just feel that their merits are not sufficient. They want to keep doing to help others with a boundless mind, and they do not cling on to the merits as benefit for themselves, but they do hope that they have more good karma so that when they want to carry out good deed, it will be easier. So a Bodhisattva need to have good merits as well. And they also know the teaching of cause and effect, that they need to do more good so that they can have abundance of resources, abundance of merits. But they don't hold on to those merits as their own. They want those resources or those merits so that it become resources that allows them to be able to help others more easily, more skillfully. Or it's just like you don't want to be rich, but you don't cling on to those money as yours. You are just like a bank that you take care of it. But when others need, you say, I have this, I can help you. I have these resources, I can help you. Because if you yourself are very poor and you really have a good heart, want to help, but you got no resources, you say, I really like to help, but I'm very sorry, I got nothing to eat as well. That's difficult. And that's why if you look at the statue of the Buddha, Bodhisattva, they are always full of jewelries, they always look cheerful, they always look rich. Because people pray to the Guan Yin. If Guan Yin looks so tired, hungry, then everyone will be saying, you yourself, I don't have enough to eat. How can you help me? Right? So that's why a Bodhisattva has abundant merits, but they don't cling on to those merits as countable, and they don't cling on to that merits as their own. It's just for the sake of helping and guiding others. So that's giving. And secondly, upholding precepts. What? Fundamentally, the Buddha precepts, even five precepts, the basic principle of the precept is protect life. Do not allow our selfish desire to bring harm to others. So it's out of compassion. We need to cultivate good habits in ourselves that is conducive to the progress of the Buddha path. So the Bodhisattva precepts, besides refrain from wrongdoing, so the first section, first part, is similar to the five precepts or precepts that talk about refrain from wrongdoings. But the Bodhisattva precepts has got two more categories. Another category is to encourage cultivation of more wholesomeness. And then last part is precepts that encourage the Bodhisattva to embrace and proactively benefit sentient beings. Go more way out to help sentient beings. So that is the three categories of the Bodhisattva precepts. So upholding precepts. So these Bodhisattva precepts are area of learning for the Bodhisattva. They help the Bodhisattva to perfect their own discipline and behavior, at the same time cultivate wholesomeness, as at the same time helps them to develop further their compassion, especially the precepts on embracing and benefiting sentient beings. Say, for example, the precepts may says that if you know that someone is sick, say for example you heard that one of your friends is sick and you just don't feel like going to visit the person, then this is not in line with the Bodhisattva precepts. So when you know that someone needs help, someone is not well, as a Bodhisattva, you will try to see, what can I do to help? Can I give the person some comfort? So the Bodhisattva precepts go into telling, how come I don't have feeling when I heard that my friend is sick? Maybe, so in other words, our sense of sympathy is a bit probably weak. Then this area of learning, so precepts is like area of learning, it's like a mirror that allows us to see, oh, my friend is sick and other friends has gone and visited him or her, and why do I have no feeling? That shows my sense of sympathy is not good enough. The Bodhisattva precepts tell me that I should go and visit my friend. to give the person some comfort. Then you will try to put in right effort to tell yourself to move a step forward, to try to train yourself to strengthen your own sense of compassion and sympathy. And that's how we gradually, through the precepts, learn to develop further the skill that we are probably not that good at, but it is important for the Bodhisattva practice. Okay, so upholding precepts ensure that we have good discipline, that ensure our, make sure that we at least can maintain our human existence, because that's very important. If we don't uphold the precepts, as we say, five precepts is the basic to be a human being. So if we want to continue to learn the Buddha's teaching, at least we need to maintain our human life. Life after life, continue to be a human being. So the precepts are like the float that save us from the ocean of suffering, so that we can always float and be able to swim to the shore of bliss. So we need to take care of this float so that there's no leakage, otherwise we'll be in danger of drowning. So precepts is very important for Bodhisattva who want to help and guide sentient beings. It is very important for them to at least maintain their human existence so that they can continue to help sentient beings. And the other thing very important about precepts in Bodhisattva is that we should not look on others who are not upholding precepts well. It's just like if we can swim very well, we have a good float, but there are others who are unable to swim well and their float may be leaking. Then we should have compassion in helping them, whether they are able to uphold precepts or not, whether they are a good person or not, because we know that everyone can change. Okay, so we should not be too proud of ourselves if we can swim well, as our ego will grow and we will get carried away and forget our direction. We may not be swimming towards the shore of bliss and meet the Buddha, we may end up in the shore of Mara. Okay, so if we got carried away, we may go to the wrong shore, right? So upholding precepts ensure our human existence so that we can continue practicing the Bodhisattva path and helping others. Also, by upholding the precepts, our own discipline and mannerism will be more serene and peaceful and good. And that will also help to inspire others to follow the Buddha's path. Because Bodhisattva is like a teacher. You want to look upon a teacher who looks a bit more dignified and will have good moral values. And if a Bodhisattva do not have good moral values, no one is going to follow the person. And it's difficult for you to guide others, and you yourself may deteriorate. So patience, to be able to endure difficulties and hardship is very important if we wish to progress. Because we have to remember, in life, conditions and environment may not always be as conducive as what we wish to be. And that's why to practice patience and tolerance is very important. There are some areas that we need to tolerate or be patient about, is people's criticism and comments, whether environment that's not very favorable, and also be patient in our practice, in our observation of the truth, very important. Practice meditation, reading the sutra, try to listen to Dharma talk that's so boring. You need to have patience. And maybe after you become patient, you get a bit of good things out of it, right? If not, then you just give up and go away. You'll find that you probably feel you wouldn't be able to gain much. To be patient in guiding others, very important, especially for the Bodhisattva practice, because others may not be friendly in responding to us, may have misunderstanding, and that's why it is very important for Bodhisattva to be very patient in guiding others. If a person who cannot tolerate may ruin their own merits, because if a person very no patient, short-tempered, they just blow up at any time, you find that people are so scared of this person, then how can they practice the Bodhisattva path? Right, next, diligence is very important in all aspects of the practice. Without diligence, we will not progress. So as we say, we develop body-mind, we need to practice. But then if you only practice for one day and stop for 1 year and not going to work, right? And so diligence means to work hard continuously, not just for a short period of time. It is very important for us to maintain diligence, for us to have good understanding on the teachings, to be determined in our practice, to rejoice in our practice. So to make sure that we keep up with our diligence, sometimes people say, how can I continue to have effort? So if we can continue, if we have firm understanding, good understanding, then you start to, the right understanding will always tell you this is the right thing to do. That's first thing, good understanding of the teaching. Second, we need to tell ourselves to be patient. Say, for example, sometimes when we practice certain methods, for example, we practice meditation. After sitting for 2 minutes, you say, what is this? I don't want to sit. If you do have no determination, then you find that you won't progress. So that's why you need to just have patience and diligence in telling yourself, just sit. I've allocated half an hour, just sit for the half an hour. So don't keep changing your thoughts. Sometimes people have alternate thoughts, a lot of alternate thoughts. Initially say, oh, today 3 o'clock, I want to do meditation. After sitting for 2 minutes, no, I think today I'll change. Today I'll just do some reading. After reading for 3 minutes, then no, I think I'll go for chanting. And then after just chanting for 1 minute, so now I think go for exercise. Then you find that you're not going to achieve anything, right? So be firm in our practice, give ourselves some time, it's very important. And then you will start to appreciate our practice. And thirdly, to maintain our diligence so that we continue to have this diligence is that if we start to gain joy in our practice, say for example, after you read some sutra, you start to have joy of Dharma, then your diligence will develop. If you meditate and you start to have gain a sense of peace and tranquility of mind, then you feel like I want to continue sitting. So that's very important. The joy in your practice will allow your diligence to continue. Then occasionally, to make sure we are diligent, some people are too diligent until they become too tired, that they do not want to rest. And they start to become so tired. So when we are diligent, it is also important for us to physically take some rest at the right time. But our mind should maintain alertness on the triple gem. Do not allow our desire ignorance to take over us. So when you are very hardworking, try to practice, you need to have proper sleep, proper time to eat, proper time to rest, so that you maintain your stamina. There are people who say, no, I want to have intensive practice for 7 days. And then no sleep, no eating, until after 3 days, they're just like dizzy, can't think, can't practice, and finally they give up. And the worst is that in future, when they think about practice, they relate to this very suffering experience that they have. They don't even dare to practice. That's not good. And that's why to be able to take proper rest, but not overindulge in the sleeping or resting or give excuses for ourselves is very important, but maintain alertness on the triple gem. So that's diligence. Meditation. So meditation, I think everyone have learned a lot on meditation, so we're not going to talk a lot on this. But remember, meditation is a foundation to develop wisdom. So in Buddhism, we practice meditation. Meditation is not the end, it is a mean to help us to develop a mind that is clear, at ease, focused, that set a foundation for the development of wisdom. Okay, so don't attach to the joy of or the bliss of meditation with the tranquility of mind. What we want is to go into contemplation and develop wisdom. So sometimes people meditate just, I want to have the joy in my body. I want to have this bliss. They attach to the joy of meditation. That means they don't have wisdom. Then they probably will go astray, right? So important thing for us to remember in Buddhism, practicing meditation is a foundation to develop wisdom. Do not attach to the joy in the meditation. And wisdom. Now, wisdom is the most important aspect in Buddhism. And it is also wisdom that one can cross the sea of suffering. However, in order to develop wisdom, we need the five practices to support us. So when we practice the generosity, precepts, patience, diligence, and meditation, it is important to bear in mind the teachings of the Buddha, be guided by our understanding, so that whatever we are doing is in line with the development of wisdom. And also this will make sure that we do not sidetrack by our arrogance, greed, hatred, jealousy, and selfishness. If the above five is not guided by, if the five paramita that we mentioned above is not guided by wisdom, they cannot be paramita. So in fact, we can only say the five practices, it can only become a paramita when you attain perfection that is coupled with wisdom that help us to cross the sea of suffering. Then we call it the paramitas that is able to guide us across the sea of suffering. So when the Buddha teach, he know that it is difficult for us to understand the profound truth. So he used conventional truth to guide us. So basically when we talk about emptiness, it's very difficult for us to understand. So he tell us, like, for example, names are conventional designation. They are not as fixed as what we thought. We tend to get carried away by words. And say, for example, someone say that we are very ugly. We get very, very angry. Ugly. U-G-L-Y. But what does U-G-L-Y means? If you haven't learned English, I do not know why it's ugly. It's just a symbol. And who says U-G-L-Y, they put together, has to mean something. Is human make meaning for communication purpose? It doesn't have a fixed identity. If I speak the word U, G, L, Y, separate, there's no meaning in it. So that's how the Buddha tried to tell us. The words is not as fixed. But the problem is that we immediately jump into when we hear the word ugly, we immediately attach to the word and start to have the perception this is a bad word. And then start to attach that word to us and think out that ourself is permanent as well, and this ugly is talking about me, and then anger develops. But then you think about U-G-L-Y, what does it mean? And thinking about, is this word referring to me? Where am I? Rising, breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out. Every second, I'm different. The person say ugly, but now I breathe in, breathe out, I'm a new person. Who are you referring to? So it is by using different methods that the Buddha tells us that everything arises due to causes and conditions are subject to change. They do not have fixed identity, and they are empty in nature. And that's how he tried to guide us step by step to understand the supreme truth. So, and since everything is empty in nature, there's no rising and falling, because when we say something rise and something fall, it's because we think of a fixed thing. But if this is not a fixed entity, then there's nothing that's rising and falling. There's nothing that we can attach to. So we should contemplate the truth of all phenomena as such, including our own body and mind. So where's the real I? Breathing in, breathing out. We are not identical. Blood is circulating. Our digestion is going on. Our mind is keep thinking. The thoughts has been changing from just now until now. Which second are we fixed? No. Which is the real fixed I? The fixed I cannot be found. It is a combination of many causes and conditions. So it is because of our ignorance that we cling on to ourselves as a real entity and develop self-centeredness And then from self-centeredness, we develop greed, hatred, arrogance, jealousy, selfishness, lead us to endless suffering. So the Buddha teaches us to reflect on the truth of ourself. And so a method that the Buddha taught is the form foundation of mindfulness, that's contemplating on our body, feelings, mind, and all phenomena. So we don't have time to elaborate on this today. So it is by realizing the truth of ourselves and all phenomena around us that we can free ourselves from entangling ourselves in suffering. So when we let go of our self-centeredness, our greedy desire, hatred, ignorance, arrogance, jealousy will also cease. When there's no real I, who is caught in suffering? So that is the wisdom of emptiness. So that's wisdom. So that's the sixth parameter. So in summary, the sixth parameter must be guided by wisdom in order to become parameter. So when we give, not just for the sake of acquiring merits, so without the thought of gaining a reward for our own generosity, precepts, we perform act to lead to a moral life without feeling that we are morally superior to others. We also should not cling on to the thoughts of ourselves as a doer of the meritorious act or others as object as this act. Understand that everything, causes and conditions, they are not fixed entity. Patience, recognize that all hardship and suffering arise dependent upon causes and conditions, and therefore there's no real nature of themselves. What is suffering? What is happiness? Just because of certain situation happen and we feel there is suffering. For some other people, may not be so. So there's no fixed identity as such. Diligent, we need to work enthusiastically towards achievement of the goal of enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings. Always be cheerful and optimistic. Never think of how great is our effort and never feel that there's the need to rest, because we want to continuously practice until attain enlightenment. Of course, as we say just then, we'll rest at the allow our rest at the proper time, but the mind is always diligent. And meditation is to set a foundation to attain wisdom, and wisdom is to be able to see things as they really are, understand emptiness, understand that everything just arises due to combination of causes and conditions. So it is with the understanding of emptiness that one can can perfectly unattach themselves to the practice that they are doing. Okay, so that's the sixth parameter. So the first three of the six perfection emphasize on the cultivation of merits. The last three are in the aspect of cultivating wisdom. Diligence is needed throughout. So diligence is actually a link. It's just like our Noble Eightfold Path. The right effort is needed throughout. It is by practicing the six perfection that we develop the wisdom and merits that can help us to cross the shore of the sea of suffering. And not only that, we are able to purify ourselves and have wisdom, but also have good merits and resources in helping and guiding others. So the six perfection help us to cross the sea of suffering, but at the same time, in the process, because it's guided by the three minds that we talk about, the mind, body, mind, loving kindness and compassion and wisdom. So we will accumulate merits and resources that allow us to help and guide others. And so, yeah, we will develop good sense of compassion while practicing the six perfections. See, when you practice, so that's why we say that it is very important that it's guided by the three minds, so that we our compassion can develop and wisdom can develop at the same time. And it is important to remember that the five perfections or the five parameters must be guided by wisdom. At the same time, the perfection of wisdom can only be accomplished with the assistance of the five perfections. So what does this mean? So initially we say we are practicing the six parameter. We are not all are not perfect, but it has to be guided by right understanding. And so in other words, this right understanding are not perfect as yet. But then with the practice of generosity, upholding precepts, patience, tolerance, and diligence and meditation, we sharpen our wisdom. And then with the wisdom, professional wisdom, it also make our practice of the five precepts, five perfections become better. And at the end, they accomplish one another. So as the saying goes, wisdom is the guide for all practices, and all these practices in turn adorn the wisdom. Okay. All right, so the conclusion, the three minds are very important in the practice of the Bodhisattva practice. So all practices of the Bodhisattva must be guided by these three essentials. Without them, the cultivations will not lead to perfect enlightenment of the Buddha. So with the initiation of the Bodhi mind, coupled with loving kindness and compassion and wisdom, a Bodhisattva practices the six paramitas and the four embracing virtues and all the good virtues deeds. And it is with the practice of the six paramita and the virtuous deeds that a Bodhisattva finally perfect his or her Bodhi mind, loving kindness and compassion and wisdom. So as we say, guided by this mind, and then through the six, to putting into real practice in the six paramita, the Bodhi mind, the loving kindness and compassion and wisdom become perfect as well. Okay, so because initially we develop the Bodhi mind, maybe not that strong, maybe the compassion is not that good enough, but then we try, and it is through dealing with people through the six paramita that we perfect our Bodhi mind, loving kindness and compassion and wisdom. So wisdom is achieved among the perfection, and it is this perfection of wisdom that helps other five perfection. And the Bodhisattva, besides the six paramita or six perfection, they also try to practice the skillful means in helping and guiding others. So the skillful means, I think we mentioned this in the CDT yesterday, is actually on top of the wisdom. So if we are talking about the six perfection, then this is the top six. So the blue writings are actually incorporate into the prajna or the wisdom section. But if you want to be more detailed, then it is with the realization of non-self, the wisdom, that a Bodhisattva transforms into skillful means in helping and guiding sentient beings. So this is the time when they have non-attachment and they are able to help others skillfully without self-attachment. Okay. So because before that, the helping may still have a bit of self, but then once they realize non-self, the help will be more pure and efficient. Okay, is there any question that anyone like to ask? Too much information, or is it too confusing?
I think it's all right.
Not too difficult?
Nah, not too difficult. I think it's all right.
Is it too boring?
Cass has a question in the chat.
Okay.
I will set the question then. Thanks, Shifu, for the talk. I'm wondering how should we practice / approach equanimity in the context of perfection of patience. Sometimes I feel it is very difficult to guide someone towards right understanding, especially when they have a firm belief in a wrong view. And I feel that my compassion is not keep helping them after a while.
Yeah, so that's why patience has to come in. And as we say, the Buddha has been trying to guide us as well for 2,600 years, and we are still full of greed, hatred, ignorance. So thinking about that, the Buddha and the Bodhisattva, life after life, try to help and guide us. And a lot of time we got carried away by our wrong thinking, our desire, and it's so difficult. But a Bodhisattva never give up on any sentient being. So we can only try our best. So one is our patience. Secondly, is our compassion in trying to put ourselves in others' position and trying to understand where does this person's thoughts come from. Because sometimes some people have their maybe cultural or upbringing, education background that make them think certain way. And so if we can understand where does it come from, then we can be probably be a bit more understanding and say, okay, I know why this person is thinking as such, and he has been trained to think this way for 20 years. Now, in a sudden, after 20 minutes talk, I want to change this person. Of course, it's not that easy, right? So we just need to make sure that, and that's where our wisdom and skillful means has to come in, that we need to firstly be patient, secondly use different method, different approach to highlight direct and indirectly. Sometimes people don't want you to directly say yours is, look, this is what it's supposed to be. Sometimes people still have their pride, and you may just have to set an example that you say, oh, this way of doing is not too bad. It's not actually talking about him or her, and the person may be able to see how what you're trying to say is actually not bad, rather than telling this person your way of thinking is wrong. Look, this is the right one. So if we take a third person as an example and let that person see the difference between his way of doing or his way of thinking as compared to the other type of thinking, then the person may be able to see, to understand it better. Because everyone are very self-protective. If you are telling the person that yours is not perfect, look, this is better, then the person start to become very self-defensive and reluctant to accept. But if you know that this person is sensitive, this person is quite self-defensive, then we don't touch on this person, but we use other third party as an example or other incident as an example for the person to see. Sometimes that may help. So different ways of giving, impart the message bit by bit over time, hopefully it can have some effect. It may also be able to get a few other people to help, that it would not only come from yourself, but some other people that this person likes or this person tends to trust. If that words come from that person, maybe it can be more effective. So patience, wisdom and skillfulness and compassion all has to come in, because you need to know that your ultimate aim is that you know that this person's mentality or the way of thinking is going to lead himself or herself to suffering. If you are very sure that this is wrong, and your aim is to free the person from suffering. So you should not become emotional and lose your patience and become angry. We just have to say, okay, it's not the right time as yet. I just need to give bit by bit. And instead of in a sudden, you want the person to accept 100%. Is it okay, Tas? Okay. Any other questions?